I think you can't talk about reptoids unless you hear from the Lizard King himself, Jim Morrison, The Doors, The End. Classic tune. We turn now to the story about reptoids in caves. I get in my lines of work, I get a lot of emails every day, hundreds, 600 to 800 a day, and it's hard to keep up with it. And I eventually get to all of it, but the one email that I always read when it arrives in my inbox in the morning is Phantoms and Monsters, Pulse of the Paranormal. It's a daily newsletter, a daily dose of paranormal activity and cryptids and UFOs and unexplained phenomena that's put out by my next guest, Lon Strickler, a paranormal researcher who gathers all these stories from all kinds of sources. A few of those stories end up in the Naps News segment that we post on the Coast to Coast website because they come from all over the place. And I figured when I saw this story in the beginning of May about reptoids in caves, that sounded like something I wanted to learn more about. And Lon is going to pop up in just a moment here and share with us the stories that he has heard and why he finds them to be credible. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us, everyone, as we start the second half of tonight's program. Lon Strickler is a paranormal researcher and author who writes and mentors on a variety of Fortean subjects. He's done his own field investigation on a whole range of topics. He casts a very wide net looking at ghosts and spiritual activity, had a Bigfoot encounter of his own that we've talked about on this program before, looks into cryptids and UFOs, and he started his Phantoms and Monsters blog back in 2005. It's got thousands of readers every day, covers a wide variety of topics, the kind of stuff that we like to talk about. I posted an example of it on the Coast to Coast website if you want to check it out. Lon, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, George.
I imagine you get so much material every day, people sending you their stories on a wide range of strange activity. How much do you get, and how do you sift through it?
I imagine maybe 20 to 30 a week. And those are just stories that I consider. I got a lot of small stories, short stories, But you got to separate the wheat from the chaff. So I probably out of those 30, I'll usually take about 3 or 4 a week.
Somebody's out there, they're saying it's all a bunch of baloney. It's all chaff. How do you figure out where the wheat is? What makes a good story that makes it into Phantoms and Monsters?
Well, for the most part, I check up on them. And normally, if when I'm able to talk to the witness and they just sound right to me, it's just the way they come back with my, when I ask them a question with their answers, I can usually tell if they actually experience something. I'm not one to say that they're telling the truth all the time, but I can pretty well tell if something actually happened to them. So then I'll go by their word. Of course, I try to dig into what happened and try to collect more information. And most times I will. But if they're embellishing, I can usually tell it.
I mean, a lot of stuff that will come in, it's so weird, and people are probably embarrassed about it. They don't want to have their identities known. It's anonymous. Do you post stories that are completely anonymous, or do you instead post ones where you know the identity, you just don't reveal it?
Both cases, it's most of them are anonymous. They don't want any ridicule from other people that may you may figure out who is giving the story. Some people will actually say it's okay to use their name, and I tell them, look, I don't think you know what you're getting yourself into. Why don't I just go ahead and post a story? And I'm not going to use your name or any identification, and we'll go from there. If you want me to update it later, then fine. And I find that most of the time they understand that and they go along with what I say.
Well, I ask these questions about the process because this story, this Reptoids in Caves, is something when you posted it in early May, you made the note that, hey, when this first broke in 2004, I guess, most people just kind of blew it off, and you said you were one of the naysayers, but then your opinion changed and you felt that it deserved to be highlighted. So tell me why it changed. It's just as additional information came in, additional accounts, or what?
Well, you know, the original story was posted, and I'll be honest with you, I cannot remember where it was posted. It was some forum somewhere. But I found out that it was originally in a call-in show, the BUFO Paranormal and UFO radio show. And this was, like you said, this was March of 2004. And the story, and I actually listened to the tape, and the story didn't change a whole lot. And so I figured, well, you know, I'm going to give it a little bit of consideration. You know, I've heard a lot of, I've heard similar stories in the past that, you know, of course, I really didn't write too much about it. But this was interesting because of the location. It was in Carthage, Missouri. I know the area has a lot of limestone caves, a lot of different facilities. And just, you know, just some of, now, I'm not saying that the whole story was absolutely true. You know, there are a few parts of it that may have been embellished, but, you know, I think the overall story was interesting and...
Well, let's tell it. Tell us the story. Let's walk us through it. Give us some detail.
Okay. Well, what happened was, this was March 7th, 2004. It was in the afternoon. It was near Carthage, Missouri, when two witnesses had gone ATV riding in an area referred to as the Underground. Now, this is a public and private storage facility near the town. The facility is miles and miles of carved out caves, and it also stores thousands of dehydrated food containers for the Navy. There's also a fallout shelter that can hold up to 40 to 50,000 people. These guys on the ATVs, and the one guy's name was Pat Garrett, which I found out later.
Huh.
They had gone about 8 miles deep into the caves when they turned into an area that was marked Naval Authoritative Zone. The walls had become more polished and finished, which was striking because this was supposed to be a newly blasted area. Both witnesses kept going and increased the speed since the floor was paved. They came upon an unusual painted pattern on the floor, in which they first thought was graffiti. The road then dipped down and took a 90-degree turn to the left. They were going too fast and knew they were going to hit the wall, but instead, they passed through some type of holographic projection of the cave wall. Now, they had come into a whole new road system, this one which was larger, much older than the one they had come from. So right away, they began noticing a musty and damp odor that intensified as they went deeper into the area. Now, the lighting had changed as well. It was much darker than the other area from which he had come. They turned on the headlights and slowed down, also noticing it was starting to get cooler. They made a right turn and started to come up on what they thought was a rest area about 40 foot away. One of the witnesses then saw something that at first he thought were a pair of fountains until the object moved. They both stopped immediately. About 30 foot away, they saw two creatures. One was very tall, at least 7 foot, maybe more, very powerful, built in reddish in color. The other was smaller, about 6 foot, and was a pale, almost albino color. This one was not as powerfully built as the other. Now, both beings resembled large reptiles. The being said nothing, but the witnesses did get a strong malevolent feeling, an evil presence of some kind from a taller one. Now, that's not unusual as far as what I hear with these type of encounters. Now, one of the witnesses screamed, and they immediately turned and started back. As they looked back, and this taller entity was following them. The one witness had an overwhelming feeling that if they got caught, some type of harm would come to them. So they passed
Yeah,
the
I'd say so. I mean,
Yeah,
I'd
I
say
think
so.
so too. And they passed through the wall projection again, looked back and saw the tall entity raise its arm, holding a weapon of some sort. It fired and hit one of the ATVs, which apparently killed the engine, causing it to stop. The rider ran to the other ATV, jumped on it. They drove away and looked back to see that the tall reptilian had now stopped at the graffiti area on the cave floor. It seemed that the creature would not cross the marked area, some type of barrier for the creature. Now, the witness slowed down, or about 75 foot away from the creature. The two men and the reptilian stared at each other for about 15 seconds, and then they left. The creature remained standing without moving. One of the witnesses called the police on his cell phone, but he was told that the security at the facility would handle the matter. Indeed, security waited for the men and threatened to arrest them if they didn't leave.
Well, who is the security? Who is this? Who is security there?
But see, that's I don't know. That's all it was said. Now, when this incident was called in on the radio show, they said that they thought it was probably Navy. But, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if it was a private firm or whatever, but they really didn't go into that.
I mean, do we know these caves? I mean, does anybody administer that land, or can you get
Yeah,
in there now?
Those caves are administered by the Navy, and I checked into that back in 2000. When I first put the story up, it was 2006, and the Navy did have that area for storing food and other equipment.
So you learned a little bit more about this Pat Garrett guy who called in and talked about it. I mean, you know, one thing that stands out for me is the fact that they would call the police, call the sheriff or whatever and report it, because people who are making this kind of stuff up, they don't usually do that because there are consequences for that. So that gives it, is there a way to confirm that the police were ever called, or is that it's too far in the past to get records like that?
The sheriff's department denied it. They outright denied there was ever a call made.
So what else did you learn about it after, I guess, this Pat Garrett guy starts talking about it in public? So a lot more detail was...
You know, this story kind of died away. I don't know why, but, you know, I just kind of, by chance, found out about it. Then when I started digging into it a little bit, a few more things came out, but other than that, it was just one of those things that was, you know, kind of making its way around the internet, and not a whole lot was said. And in fact, you know, that wasn't unusual, because quite frankly, these reptoid cave encounters, even though you'd hear about one once in a while, it's very rare that was anybody reporting these things.
So, but this underground place, I think you had written that Pat Garrett called it the underground, and it is some kind of a fallout shelter. Is it really? Is it a huge?
Yeah, there's a fallout shelter there. There's, in fact, from what I understood, there's three different facilities in western Missouri that are designated fallout shelters. Though I think right now they do store equipment and such in those, but I know this one in Carthage is big enough to hold 40,000 to 50,000 people, and that was verified.
So you heard some other details about the conversation with whoever security was, Navy or whoever, and they threatened these guys. Hey, presumably you're trespassing. If you come back, you're in trouble. And then they took it seriously.
Yeah, they threatened to lock them up. Now, you know, I don't know. The sheriff denied even getting a phone call. When I called there, I called the local sheriff. I even called another local police force. And offhand, I don't even remember what the name of it was. But nobody had a record of it.
What do you know about the witnesses? Do you know much about their background, whether they are reliable folks and have...
The other guy I didn't know, Pat Garrett, he worked at a local construction company, and he had, in fact, he knew this underground because he had helped build some offices at the location a year or so before that.
You subsequently got a letter, I guess, a typed letter from somebody named Jerry, who you said is not his real name, lives on the West Coast. What was in that? What did he tell you?
Yeah, this guy, Jerry, and of course that's not his name. He lived in the West Coast, gave me no contact information, gave me a little bit of personal information, but I gave it strict anonymity. I told him I wasn't going to put anything in there, you know, but then, you know, give me any type of identification. So, he told me that the letter said, this is the first time I'm disclosing my experience to the public. My family has been previously informed of the details. At the time, I owned a small business, which I had started after I finished a 12-year stint in the military. I was then living near Eldridge, Missouri, and was raised in the general area and knew the terrain fairly well. I had spent time at the U.S. Army Engineer School in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and some of the training included spelunking. When I left the Army, I continued to explore caves as recreation. Now, in 1993, I helped form a local group of experienced cavers. We would get out on the weekends and explore some of the cavern systems throughout Missouri and Arkansas. The experience I am about to describe took place in the summer of 1995. I was on my own that day, which was not uncommon. I had decided to check out a cave in Camden County, Missouri, which is part of a fairly large system in the area. From what I could tell, this particular cave had not been explored for a long period of time. The entrance was very narrow and well hidden. After squeezing through the opening, I descended another 50 foot or so before the cave began to open up into a series of chambers. I moved through several of these chambers, taking my time to examine the area for possible artifacts and formations. I finally reached what I thought was the end of the cave. I started to hear a rustling sound that was echoing from a small opening near the top of the chamber. I assumed the sounds were bats and didn't pay much attention to it, but after a while I heard motorized sounds and talking. I stood and listened for several minutes, wondering what was on the other side of this chamber. The opening was about 10 foot above me. I maneuvered my way up to the opening, which was flat and narrow, but big enough for me to get a decent look into it. As I positioned myself to the front of the opening, I started to see light on the other end. The passageway was only a few feet long, but it was just narrow enough for me to move through. It was just too narrow for me to move through. As I looked through the opening, there was a very warm draft of air hitting me in the face. As well, the air had a very acrid, vinegar-like odor. There was very large and well-lit room with limestone walls. I noticed a small vehicle that looked like a golf cart but was very low to the ground and without wheels. I continued to observe until I started to hear voices that were getting louder and nearer. Something was making its way toward the vehicle. I had to rub my eyes because I didn't believe what I was looking at.
That seems like a good place to stop. I'm going to stop you there for a moment, and we're going to pick up the story on the other side, because wait till you hear what this guy says he was looking at. Robbie Williams, friend of the program, takes us down the road to Mandalay, which would seem like a place for good strange encounters like this one. Back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. That's the great Joni Mitchell, Court and Spark, one of the great songs that she has given us over the years. I don't know if you've heard much about what's going on with her, but our thoughts go out to her. We're sending positive vibes her way. Joni Mitchell, one of a kind. We're talking with Lon Strickler, who is, we appreciate him being here because he's got some challenges going on in his own family right now and took time out to share with us some chilling stories about reptoids in caves. I suppose if it was just one person telling this story, you could sort of scratch it off, but it's multiple people telling very similar kinds of experiences. We'll get back to it right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Just to recap for a moment, we started with the story about this reptoid encounter in caves in Missouri and a couple of witnesses who had sort of a chilling encounter with some beings. And then we picked it up with another story, something that sounds very similar, also in Missouri. A guy who wrote to Lon Strickler and says his name is Jerry, and he is explaining a series of events that he encountered. Lon, what I don't know is, this is Missouri where he's saying this happened. Is it the same area, the same caves?
Yeah, it's from what I understood. Now, he didn't give me an exact location, but it was closer to the Arkansas border. So Carthage, I guess maybe 30 to 40 miles south of Carthage.
So this cave system is not that big. It doesn't stretch all that way across 30 miles, does it?
I don't think so. There are a lot of different systems in the Ozarks. The Ozarks are loaded with a lot of caves.
So as you were,
what I understand.
You were telling the story right before the break. This guy is down in these caves exploring. He hears some voices. He sees what looks like a golf cart, and then he sees something moving around. What was it that he saw?
Yeah, he said he had to rub his eyes because he didn't believe what he was looking at. This creature, because it was not a man, stood about 7 foot, had brown scaly skin. The face and head were shaped like a human with a flat nose, but there were no ears or hair. The top of the head had a slight scaly ray or ridge that extended down to the back of the neck. From what I could see, it had lips and regular-sized eyes. The arms were very long and muscular with human-like hands. It also had a massive 4 to 5 foot tail that tapered to a point. It was dressed in a gold metallic outfit with long pants and shoes. It also carried an oval pack attached to its back.
I mean, a gold outfit. It sounds like a movie a costume or something.
Yeah, it sounds like a B movie. I asked him about that, and he was emphatic about it. So that's what he saw. He said so. Anyway, I watched as this thing was looking at something on the vehicle. I had a high speed camera which I used to document my cave exploration. I was able to obtain a few distorted images of the being. For some reason, while I was taking the photos, the creature stopped and turned, looking in my direction. I'm not sure if it heard me, but it definitely knew of my presence. It made some terrible hissing sound as it continued to look in my direction. That was enough for me. I quickly started making a beeline out of the cave. When I reached the entrance, I was shaking and hyperventilating. I finally reached my vehicle and drove home. He said, now, I continue to explore caves in the area. I have heard stories of people encountering strange underground beings, but I have never disclosed my experience. A few years after my experience, I went back to the cave, but was unable to get near it since the area is now government property. I can assume that I witnessed something that I wasn't supposed to see. It pains me to think what secrets are being kept for us. To those who say that there are no non-humans living among us, well, think again. They are here. I do have the aforementioned evidence of the experience, but I do not wish to release this at the present time, Jerry. Now,
so,
I tried to get him to send me the photos, and in fact, I tried for about 2 years after I originally posted this, and no go. And in fact, the last time I tried to get a hold of Jerry, it was sent back, the email.
I can see people saying, Lon, I can see somebody saying, oh, come on, if you had encountered a reptilian in a cave, you're not going to go back there. But of course, people would go back there. I think you'd probably go back there. I'd go back there. You'd want to see it again and see if it was still around and confirm that you weren't just imagining it.
In fact, when I from what I understand from him, the area, there was a wider area around that cave that is now government property, and in fact, it was fenced in. So,
And when you say
not
government, you
perfectly
mean
spotted.
military or BLM or what government? What agency do you know?
It just had government. That's what he told me. He said it just had government. Didn't say anything about military. Didn't say anything. It just said U.S. government.
So it's sort of confirmation, same kind of a being, ex minus the gold lame spacesuit or whatever it was. But then you had another one. You had another story that was similar. That also came your way, that certainly you would put in the same drawer or file.
Yeah, this one actually came from Austria. The original email that I got from the witness was forwarded to me during the Christmas holidays with honest intent and deference to the witness. His name is Gregor. I debated whether I wanted to use it because, for a lot of different reasons. I first of all, he was having problems with his English, and it was really broken, and it wasn't written that well. And I did talk to the gentleman after I finally got through to him later on, but we worked things out, and I think I got the account to the best I could do, So this is what I wrote. Hello, Lon. I'm writing to you from where I live in Gumden, Austria. Recently, I came across your story about the man who had an encounter with an alien-type creature in a cave in the United States. The story is similar to my encounter in an obscure cave here in Upper Austria. This area is known for salt mining. It's the former salt mine in the Habsburg Empire. The former Habsburg Empire. I am a trained and certified geologist. I studied at the University of Salzburg and in the United States at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I have explored and documented cave systems throughout Austria, Czech Republic, Poland since 1988. Now, in May 2011, I was in a narrow cave that a colleague had recently found. This was approximately 2 kilometers north of Obertron, on the opposite side of a descending mountain range in the foothills near the east bank of Hallstatter Lake. As I moved through the difficult passageway, I started to hear voices emanating from the darkness ahead of me. I stopped to collect a few samples from the cave wall, chipping it with my pick. I moved deeper, maybe 50 meters, until I noticed the voices again. I am familiar with echoes and Doppler effect sounds in caves, but this was totally different. I stood quietly for several minutes until the voices stopped. I again moved through the cave, almost crawling at this point. After another 40 meters, I ascended into a chamber that was big enough to accommodate several people. Now, there were two wide openings on the opposite side of the chamber. Each looked like it had been excavated by a machine. There was also an obvious rotting odor. As I examined the chamber, I noticed an odd red iridescence as I passed the light over the rock floor. When I knelt down to collect the sampler, I again heard noises, voices, coming from one of the passageways. At this point, I was terrified and started to hurry back through the narrow cave. After I squeezed back several meters, I was able to turn my head just enough to look back into the dark chamber.
Why don't we ju well, let's jump ahead. Describe what this
Okay.
guy says he saw, the creatures.
Now, the creatures were humanoid in stature, but these were not human. Each varied in height, but looked the same, muscular lizards that walked upright like humans. There is not a better term I can use to identify these beings. These creatures wore dark-colored, full-body uniforms that extended and covered the feet. I couldn't tell the exact color of the skin, but each had a pronounced muzzle. The long tails were very prominent and swiftly swayed back and forth as they moved forward. The arms and legs were massive. I could detect the musculature through the uniforms. There were voices also, as if they were talking to each other. The voices actually sounded human, though I could not detect the language. There were possibly 20 or more of these creatures as they walked single file through the chamber into the other opening.
So let me ask you this. Could this be somebody down there in costumes? I mean, I guess it could be, couldn't it?
Oh, I guess it could be.
There's
Why, I don't know, but...
Yeah, there's a photo. There's a photo that you published with this image of a reptilian, a nasty looking face. But it looks like a gargoyle. It looks like a statue of a gargoyle. Did that occur to you?
It's a more saurian, more dinosaur type looking face. You know, I wish he would have gave me another example of the full body, but that's the example he sent to me. But it's, you know, it's similar to some of the others that I have received in the past. So I'm quite frank with you. This one does look a little nasty.
When you put a story like that out, what's the reaction from your readers? Do they scoff? Do they laugh? Do they, that happened to me, but...
Honestly, I get very little feedback as far as anything as being negative.
What's your personal feeling?
I've been doing this so long now. I guess I got a very good dedicated bunch of readers, but I very rarely get any negative feedback.
What's your feeling on this story in general? You think there's a race of reptilians or reptoids? And to tell you the truth, I don't know if there's a difference between, maybe it's just semantic, reptoids and reptilians. But you think there's something like that on Earth living with us?
Yeah, there are a lot of things, a lot of different theories about these things. I think that in some sense, some of these beings that people call rip, so even the Greys, I think this may be descendants making their way back, human descendants making their way back somehow, time travel. I've also heard the theory about, when the dinosaurs were wiped out, some of these reptilian-type beings, the smaller ones, made their way underground and eventually, evolved into these humanoid-like creatures that stayed underground. I don't know about that. I guess it's possible. But, there's a lot of other theories, too. There's theories about the Nephilim and these type of creatures being part of the Nephilim. It's something to ponder, but I really don't have an answer.
You ever seen these anthropological projections? They would say, well, if the dinosaurs had survived, what they'd look like. I've seen these drawings where scientists give their input, the artists draw it, and a lot of them look a heck of a lot like what you're describing these witnesses say they saw.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you want to use the theory that this may be a human descendants that evolved into these type of creatures, then, if the technology is that they could make their way back, or even if they're using simulations of some type, who's to say that's not going on?
What do you make of the stories told by David Icke, who's been, I think, a guest on this program a couple of times? He thinks that there's reptilians in human form who control all kinds of stuff around the planet.
Yeah, well, I respect David Icke, but I don't particularly agree or even understand a lot of what he says about the reptilians. I'm not saying he's not telling the truth, but I just have major doubts about what he says.
This would be an example, as we started our conversation, of, you know, what do you make of it when these stories come in? I guess one story about reptilians in a cave, you kind of have to, you know, take it with a grain of salt. You get two of them, you wonder what's going on. You get three of them, then it becomes enough to write an article about it, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And these aren't the only stories about reptilians that I've received. You know, I actually had one a couple weeks ago where a woman was part of a group visiting the caves at, in Harrison County, Indiana. And she and a friend saw these small reptilian-like humanoids in this cave. And it was one of those, you know, one of those caves where they tore through a cavern. And she wrote me about it, and she swears that, you know, these little 2 to 3 foot small reptilian-type creatures with bright yellow eyes, she said she noticed at least one of them. So, you know, and I have heard that type of stuff before as well.
Is it always in caves? Is it always in caves, always underground?
It's always underground. Yeah, I've never, you know, you hear of the, you know, abduction scenarios where these reptilian type beings are present, but normally it's you know, it's just a graze or maybe an insectoid. From abduction scenarios that I have researched. In particular, the David Eckhart and his family, they seem to be fairly malevolent beings. They don't like humans, and seems a lot of what they're into is human experimentation. And you know, from what I've been, you know, what I was told by David was most of those people that are abducted by these reptilians don't make it back. They're disposed of.
Here's the trouble I have. The part that troubles me is the proximity of U.S. military. The idea that the Navy is there, that maybe they know about it, or in collusion,
yeah,
or cahoots, or why in the world? I mean, I don't understand that part of it. I can imagine some scenarios. Do you have any theories?
Well, you know, you hear about the Dulce Underground in New Mexico, and there's a lot of stories that come up. Well, they've got reptoids in there, in other facilities, mostly in the western part of the country. People have actually come out and said that they've seen reptoids in these facilities. Does the government have some type of involvement with them? You know, I kind of believe that the world governments may have been cooperating in some type of in some ways with alien beings as far as reptilians go. I don't know what the extent of it is.
Or they're helping to spread that story as a way to scare us for some reason that we haven't quite figured out yet. We're talking with Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, Pulse of the Paranormal. When we come back, we'll expand the conversation a little bit to talk about some of the other creatures that he's written about and chased. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.